Hi, everyone. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
We, the jury, unanimously find the defendant, Amber Geiger, guilty of murder as charged in the indictment. No outburst.
Former Dallas police officer Amber Geiger has been found guilty of killing her unarmed black neighbor, Botham Jean, in his own apartment last year. Geiger, who is white, told jurors that she mistook Jean's apartment for her own and thought he was a burglar. The judge presiding over the trial told the jury to consider what's known as the Castle Doctrine, a law similar to stand your ground laws, when determining if Geiger was guilty. But in a rare murder conviction for a police officer, the jury denied Geiger's argument for self-defense, and she now faces up to 99 years in prison. To explain the historical context of the self-defense law and to talk about its role in this case, I'm joined by Caroline Light, a researcher at Harvard University and the author of Stand Your Ground, A History of America's Love Affair with Lethal Self-Defense. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Tanzina, thank you so much for having me.
So briefly explain to us what the Castle Doctrine is and how does it relate to what are known as Stand Your Ground laws?
So essentially, the Castle Doctrine has a really long history. It originates in early 17th century England, actually, with a case that popularizes the expression, a man's home is his castle. And so thereafter, that principle of the home or the castle being a safe space would permeate English common law and translate into what would become the United States. So essentially what the principle means is that if you're in your home and you're attacked, you have no duty to retreat before responding with violence, lethal violence, if necessary.
Now, how many states have stand your ground laws along these lines of the Castle Doctrine? Do we know?
So, yeah, first I want to differentiate, though, between the Castle Doctrine and stand your ground laws. The way I explain it is that stand your ground laws are the Castle Doctrine on steroids, to take the Castle Doctrine and stretch its boundaries out beyond the home into any place where a person may legally be. Well over half of the states in the nation now have some version of a stand your ground law that essentially stretches the boundaries of the Castle Doctrine and say that you do not have to try to first get away from a threat. You can respond with lethal violence immediately.
What's at the core here, particularly with the Castle Doctrine, is that it's you being in your own home. The jury in this case, in the Amber Geiger case, was allowed to take the Castle Doctrine into consideration. Now, here's what I think a lot of people were reacting to. John was in his own apartment. How does that square?
Exactly. Oh, it was very disturbing. When Judge Kemp told the jury that they should consider the Castle Doctrine in the case, I think it was quite jarring to hear that. However, the judge was following protocol because, at least in Texas, there's a principle known as mistake of fact. So if you're the defendant and you're claiming on the stand that you thought you were in your own home and therefore were defending yourself against what you perceive to be a lethal threat, the jury needs to consider the Castle Doctrine. It's up to the jury. In other words, the judge knew that if she didn't issue that jury instruction, the case could be thrown out. Now, in this case, thankfully, the jury knew, based on all of the evidence, that Amber Geiger's claims were not reasonable.
Caroline, remind us of specific cases, and I think there's one that comes to mind for many of us, the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case in which a stand your ground law was used as a defense. And were there any that were used successfully? Because I think in the Zimmerman case, that wasn't the case.
In 2012, when George Zimmerman shot and killed unarmed 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, he wasn't arrested right away, even though it was very clear that he had shot and killed an unarmed 17-year-old. And that was partly because the state has the first and a very strong stand your ground law. George Zimmerman wasn't arrested for a very long time until public outcry pressured police to arrest George Zimmerman. So in that case, it very much revolved around this perception of reasonable threat. And the jury believed that his perception of a lethal threat from an unarmed 17-year-old was reasonable. So the case didn't necessarily turn on stand your ground, but rather was about justifiable homicide and this presumption of threat from a young black male.
And I want to talk a little bit, you mentioned race there, and obviously race was at the center of a lot of the issues with the Amber Geiger case. And there's another case which sort of looks at not just race, but also domestic violence and abuse. And I'm thinking of the Marissa Alexander case, who is a Florida woman who invoked a similar stand your ground defense, and that defense was rejected. What can you tell us about that?
The laws are not just racist in adjudication of homicide, they're also deeply sexist. And in the case of Marissa Alexander, she didn't even kill anybody. She used her firearm to deflect the attack of her estranged spouse. She fired two warning shots to get away and then was taken to prison. And this was about a week after having delivered a baby girl. So she spent the first 3 years of her child's life in prison for protecting herself in a state that has a very strong stand your ground law. And Marissa Alexander isn't the only one. There are so many cases throughout the nation in stand your ground states where women try to stand their ground against their largest statistical threat, which happens to be their own, usually male, intimate partners or ex-spouses or ex-boyfriends. And they end up going to prison. And in the case of Marissa Alexander, being a woman of color, in her court case, she was described as being angry rather than fearful. That harmed her. And she ended up spending, as I said, 3 years in prison before she was released on house arrest.
Do you see this as something that's going to expand as we move forward in the next, say, decade or so? Or do you see pushback coming to these laws, given the racial and gender disparities that are displayed when these laws are implemented?
One would expect, given all the data, given all of the anecdotal evidence that stand your ground laws privilege the few at the expense of the many, you would expect to see more pushback. The pushback we're seeing right now is mostly at the grassroots level. We now live in a nation that has more firearms than people. And I think when you consider that so many people are carrying firearms, you need to respond in the moment rather than deliberating carefully when you perceive a lethal threat. I try to be an optimistic person, but my actual perception here is that stand your ground ideology is spreading. Even if it's only in over half the states, I believe that the notion of lethal self-defense as a human right, as an obligation, is actually spreading through the minds of our citizenry.
Caroline Light is a professor and researcher at Harvard University and the author of Stand Your Ground, A History of America's Love Affair with Lethal Self-Defense. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.